That's Poncho Sanchez, conguero, percussionist extraordinaire, arranger, and all things Afro-Cuban jazz with Afro-Cuban fantasy. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It's Wednesday, April the 17th, and the U.S. Secret Service is investigating a letter containing a, quote, suspicious substance, unquote, that was addressed to President Obama. The agency confirmed today. Another suspicious package was received this morning at the Washington offices of Senator Richard Shelby, a Republican of Alabama, and that was announced just a few minutes ago by White House Press Secretary Jay Carney. The suspicious letters to Obama and to Shelby come less than 24 hours after Capitol Police confirmed it was investigating another letter addressed to Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi that also tested positive for ricin, a poisonous substance. CNN is reporting that a source close to the investigation into the bombings at the Boston Marathon on Monday says substantial progress has been made and that, quote, significant news, unquote, will soon be available. As you know, two bombs described by authorities as crudely made using pressure cookers, nails and ball bearings and a circuit board timer exploded near the finish line of the Boston Marathon on Monday. Three people, including a graduate student from China, were killed. 184 were wounded, and 13 people lost limbs. An all-out investigation is underway, and authorities say they have no suspect or motive in the crime, which has been classified as an act of terrorism. The president has condemned it as heinous and cowardly, and has vowed to bring to justice whoever is responsible. What we are going to do today is what we would describe as media literacy. By that I mean really stopping and taking a very detailed look at how information, especially in situations like this, how they are shaped so as to shape, in turn, our opinions and our ideas, our knowledge base, even the way we move on a day-to-day basis, what informs our decisions. No doubt you have seen coverage of this, and in that sense, we're not just going to go merely with the television, but television was particularly poignant in this regard because it's covered in all various media. But we're going to take a look at that. And when I say we're going to take a look at that, I mean you are. I just want to tell you how we're going to approach this. You're going to analyze something and tell us in the different ways that things were impressed upon you as you observed and you listened to the news, you watched the television, you saw what was going on. What was it that you came away from that experience with? And to what degree was it actual news, or the process of creating news, or a hidden agenda behind the news? The number is 888-874-4888. Don't worry, I'll guide you through it, but this is what we're going to do today. Why? Because in situations like this, and I don't want to give anything away here, because that is part of the media literacy exercise that we're going to do. Whenever situations like this occur, there's a specific tone that prevails. And within that context, we are all vulnerable to being swayed one way or the other. This is unfolding. And we already are seeing how the media are choosing to behave. And then we will see as we go along with this. This is not just for today. We'll be continuing this because it is a continuing investigation. Remember, we talk about symbolic issues, talk about what is literal, what is symbolic. And we're going to learn about things that I'll talk about as news values. News values. So, 888-874-4888. As you tuned in and got information on this event, what did you notice about the media coverage of it, and how did you react to it? Were you conscious of how you were reacting to it? What was the role of the reporter? What was the role of the camera, the photographer? What were the news values at play in the immediate aftermath of these bombs going off? And now we have, what, it's 48 hours, a little bit more, and we can see the change. The rhythm is changing, but there's something very, very much constant here. So you are astute people. I want to see how you literally relate to media and how you ingest information. We all are affected, by the way. Everybody's affected, myself included. We're all affected by this thing called media. But in our exercise today, we have to take a far more aggressive or assertive role and a very open mind that all that is being presented may not just be about news. Maybe it's about something else, and there are many other things that are in the mix here. Who is going to be our first person up at bat at 888-874-4888? I could get things started by talking about the context of things. The context here is, here's a marathon. It's an internationally known event, and a bomb goes off. And then within a few seconds, another bomb goes off, and it's mayhem and madness and confusion and tragedy. So the news value here is this notion that something dramatically wrong is happening. And in the immediate aftermath, the charge of the people covering the marathon now is to capture the urgency of the moment and to let us know how devastating this thing really was. But is that all that is going on? When we get the first reports, is that all that's going on? They're telling us this is a big story, this is what has happened. Major explosion, and then another one, and then the carnage. Take it from there. Let's go, folks. Let's see your brain in action. 888-874-4888. I used to do this media literacy exercise very, very often, because what we see and hear and read and end up with as information, it's all controlled, of course, but we seldom sift out the information, and we seldom distinguish between what is actual news and what is something else. And by the time we believe we are fully informed about something, we are fully actually programmed about it. Not necessarily informed, we are programmed about it. And you can see, I picked it up right away. I saw how the media changes were occurring and how people were positioning themselves for all kinds of reasons, how the networks essentially were they were openly and still are openly competing with each other. And the whole idea is driven by, well, you will know, Louis from New Jersey. Thank you.
Good morning or good afternoon, Trees.
Hello, Louis.
I used to listen to this when you used to do this on another station. And as a teacher, I felt it was one of the most educational courses I ever had.
Thank you.
People who listen to the show might not notice that you know that you ran a newspaper. So this is something that you're used to doing professionally.
Thank you.
With your permission, I'd like to mention four things that I did not hear on NPR, on WBAI, or any other media. Four things that were not said. No one observed that the tragedy should make Americans reflect on the appalling consequences of drone attacks launched by their own government in Afghanistan and Pakistan. No one commented that the horrendous images from Boston couldn't help recalling that NATO and the U.S. bombed the Republic of Yugoslavia for 79 consecutive days for humanitarian reasons, as if anyone that could call bombing humanitarian were not deranged. No one suggested it was a short step to extrapolate the devastation and horror we saw in Boston to the almost unimaginable destruction wreaked upon entire countries like Libya and Iraq. And no one suggested that the horrors in Boston, the carnage that we saw, rendered American support for the savagery of the Israeli Defense Forces in Gaza incomprehensible. So that's what I took away from yesterday. I'm going to hang up and listen to your response on radio.
But before you go, though, I have to ask, were you expecting that?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely, I was not. But when I heard Obama, pontificating on what an outrage it was, I couldn't help but think of what he's done.
Well, thank you, Louis. You've got the ball rolling. Louis told us what was not mentioned, but I want to know from you, as you watched the coverage, how did it impact you, and what did you, in the moment, what did you gather about the news function, the function of the news reporters? Who else will come up to bat? 888-874-4888. Of course, to extrapolate what Louis had just suggested, this is why they're called mainstream media. They cannot and will not go into the far reaches of journalism because that becomes a political statement. They're not there to make that kind of political statement. They're there to make a different kind of political statement. And I'm waiting to find out who can tell me what is the political statement that they all agree. I mean, it's not like they sat down and had a conference call about it. This is how they automatically function. In a situation like this, there's a political purpose to media coverage. Dave from Brooklyn.
Hi. The one thing that I'm going to talk again about what I didn't notice rather than what I did, but what I haven't noticed is that the symbolism in this attack.
Oh, tell me about that, because that's number one on my list.
Well, it's a cultural event. It's not like 9/11 was the symbolism was obvious. It was the central military establishment of the United States and the central business establishment. But this was a cultural and a sports event, and so it's quite different. It's quite different. And
but it was a sports event. But there's another set of things that come in to the environment of the story.
Yes, you're right. It's a sports event.
And
what
a
else,
cultural
what else
event.
Shapes, what else shapes the environment of the story itself?
The environment of the story itself? I don't know. I don't know where
it's
you're going with that.
It's Patriots Day.
Uh-huh. Okay?
It's Patriots Day in Boston and in Maine, the two states that celebrate Patriots Day. So it's Patriots Day, and it is, as you called it, a cultural event. It's the marathon. It's a worldwide, a world-renowned event. Okay, you good. That's symbolism. What else could you throw in for symbolism? You're doing very well, by the way.
Well, thanks. I don't know. I was just struck by that, and I haven't seen anybody commenting on the symbolism of it. Not that I've looked that much. I haven't immersed myself in the media about this event, but I noticed those things were absent. The symbolism was absent.
How did it strike you, though? How did you manage to get to that point of understanding the symbolism of it?
Well, because terrorism, they're calling it terrorism, so terrorism usually is very upfront about its symbolism, and it's not apparent in this attack.
You don't think so?
Well, no, it wasn't to me, but you just mentioned the Patriots Day. So,
could I suggest a little hint here?
Sure.
How were the devices described?
Oh, crude.
Crude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Boston is the home of what major institution that specializes in defense research?
Oh, MIT.
Okay. It's the exact opposite, isn't it? Here is you in the seat of one of the leading institutions that specializes in military research, i.e., the sophistication behind weaponry. And here is a low-tech,
right,
cruelty device. You know, that's symbolism. That's incredible symbolism right there.
Right. So is it? Are we pointing here to the need for more high tech? Is this a roundabout way of defending drone technology and that sort of thing?
No. What we're saying is you appreciate the symbolism for what it is. As a reporter, if you're writing a nice story, a comprehensive story, certainly the ironies of these things would occur to a thinking writer to place these things in the environment. This is part of the environment of the story. It is occurring in Boston, home of the famous Tea Party. Pardon that pun. That might come in later on. It is the home of some of the most incredible institutions, including those that specialize in military research and development. High tech. And this is a low-tech situation that delivered really nasty results in a way that you can't help but appreciate the contrast and the symbolism there. It is occurring at the Boston Marathon, a long-time presence in that city, and a worldwide event. So, yes, symbolism is important. Thank you.
Okay.
You wanted to add something, Dave?
No, I just hope somebody else can take it further.
Yeah, you did very well. Thank you so much. You did really well, Michael from New Jersey. Thank you.
Hi, Trace. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
I think you hit on a lot of the points. Some of the points I was going to make. I noticed that. Journalists tend to build images, and they tend to be broad brush kind of images, and they pull us away from the graphic actuality of it, even though they keep showing again and again and again and again the film that they had you know, they didn't have all that much, so it was kind of boring to see the same guy falling again and again. It's not
the 78-year-old guy. And
it's
by the
not
way,
funny, but I mean, how many times are you going to see that guy fall on the floor?
Well, you know why? There's a reason for that, I think, and that is that the cameras covering the marathon had been hardwired or permanently situated.
Right.
In order to cover the
marathon.
That's
what they had. That's the,
right.
the footage that they had.
And they didn't have enough time to dismantle and convert into a spontaneous situation that quickly.
So I did notice a progression of the coverage and a progression of the journalistic efforts that they were making. And you know, they were characterizing, first of all, this is a horrendous thing that happened to individuals and destroyed, you know, their lives, changed their lives forever in an instant. Okay, that's the reality of it. These people were hurt, injured. A bomb exploded. Right now they know hardly anything about it. They know a lot about the bomb itself. We keep seeing now, we see that pressure cooker over and over again, crumpled up in a certain way. And that's the image we have. And yes, it's crude. They say it's crude, but we need high-tech ways to combat this. So, you know, terrorism is a thing of experts because they've got all of these experts, the journalists, in the wings, and they're going to interview the experts, and the experts are going to tell us that it's an expert thing. And they're not going to tell us much about it, but they're going to tell us that terrorism is for experts. It's not for the average person. You have to listen to us, you know, tell you how the, you know, we're going to pull you into the weeds on this thing. So there's a number of things going on, but, you know, somebody like Chris Matthews is there characterizing Boston, and you know, Boston is tough, and they're resilient, and they're going to come back, you know? So it's not
exactly
about these people that are now all of a sudden it's about the city itself. So now we're going to characterize the city and how, you know, how the character of the city, you know, and then the character of Americans, and the marathon is an American thing to do. And, it, you know, and this is American, and it's Boston, and it's the Yankees, and it's the Red Sox. And so we're pulled away from the graphic reality of it. And we're given all of these kaleidoscopic expanding images from these journalists, you know, explaining that it's, you know, it's not what you see, but it's bigger than that. You know, it's a flag waving event. So and then we're going to pull you back into the weeds with the experts, and we're going to draw you out into these fantastic images. And it's really us against them, you know, and the low tech people, you know, have a way to impact the high tech people. So I, you know,
you should see my face right now. I'm so pleased that you nailed this one. This is huge. And why would the media function in that capacity? Why would it be the cheerleader?
Well, I think this is in their it's somewhat in their DNA. You know, and they're in cahoots with the whole this whole, you know, nationalistic movement, because it's such an easy exploitation for the, you know, to round up, you know, the citizens and move them in this way or that way. You know,
but there's an insidious thing to it. It's automatic, but it's also insidious. And what do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I always go back to the way they manipulated us in the past. You know, I think back to the New York Times, you know, putting Judith Miller on the front page, you know, talking about curveball and how this is a no-brainer, that this is what's happening, and it wasn't happening at all.
Well, actually, the media recognizes its obligation. I should say the mainstream media recognizes it as an obligation whenever things like this occur to do, while they're reporting, they must do a great job of keeping the American spirits high. And you notice very early on, the story started to shift into the direction of, oh, here we are again. We are having an Al-Qaeda moment. And it psychologically orients the viewer or the listener to the expectation that that is how it's going to go.
Yeah, because they're doing this flag waving, you know, and it goes from, you know, from the microcosm of the marathon to, you know, to a larger circle in Boston itself, and the character of the people, and the mayor, and the police chief, and then it expands further to the FBI, okay? And these are ever expanding circles of influence. Now it's at the federal level, okay? We've gone to the minuscule, the micro level, to mm-hmm. to the next level, which is the city and the local community, the Back Bay, then Deval Patrick is there, then the police chief, and then it's expanded, then the FBI is there, and the experts are pulled in right along the way. The doctor, it makes a comment that, you know, we learned a tremendous amount from Afghanistan in how we treat these people.
Okay.
So now Afghanistan was the right thing to do because now we know how to treat these people with blown off legs.
Okay. You know, this is exactly why we do these kinds of programs. Because it probably went right over most everybody's heads. But, you know, you see inserted into what should be, quote, legitimate news, you understand the undertone here, and actually it comes to the surface, which is propaganda.
Yes, the building. You know,
yes.
it's a building layer upon layer. And as the story goes on, of course, you know, instantly they're not prepared, you know. But, this, you know, the producers and everybody are in the back saying, yeah, and now all the information's coming in. It's coming in from here and there. And then these, you know, the guys in the higher offices are starting to put it together, you know. And then they're coming out with an agenda, a plan. How are we going to present this? What it's going to look like? And, you know, and it's, you know, they're always pushing it's the us and the us against them. You know, they continuously maintain the divisions, which is so important, it seems to them, that the division, and it's a lot of back padding. You know, the Bostonians are terrific, aren't they? And, you know, these
yeah.
people are tremendous, and this is the man of the world who helped this individual, and you know, there's a lot of backslapping and awarding going on.
And in the statement they make about what a great resilient city Boston is, of course, nobody will discuss the fact that it had a huge segregation problem not too long ago.
Oh yeah, you've put us
seriously on the map today. I'm so proud that we were able to talk with you today too, and get the benefit of your thinking. It's excellent. Thank you so much. We have Ronnie, the limo driver from New York. Hello, Ronnie.
This is Ron.
Hello, Ron.
How you doing? I'm not a limo driver, though.
Oh, somebody said you're a limo driver.
That's interesting. No, but it's, as I said to you yesterday, it is oligarchical collectivism. It is our ignorance is their strength.
But tell us, I mean, take out of the scenarios that were presented to us those pieces that illustrate your point.
Okay. Here's one. There was a tweet from the Boston, hold on for a minute. Let me get my glasses here. I think it was the Boston Post. I can't really see it right now. I don't have my glasses. But there was Boston Globe, okay.
Globe.
And it stated that there were going to be controlled demolitions by the police force at 12 o'clock, I believe. And the bombs went off at 2, right? Didn't hear anything about that. I didn't hear anything about the fire that was at JFK, where JFK keeps the papers, that library. Didn't hear anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you know, you think that somebody might have mentioned it. Okay. So you know, these are kind of curious things to me, especially that one with the breaking news that was tweeted.
That there was a so-called drill, and the police were saying, don't get all upset, it's a drill?
No, let me get my glasses. There was supposed to be a controlled detonation.
Right.
Okay. Let me see. The exact tweet is, okay, breaking news, police will have controlled explosions on block, on the 600 block of B-O-Y-L-S-T-O-N Street, and that, I believe, is the same block that the marathon's on?
Right.
Okay. Well, how come we didn't know anything about that?
Well, you know, I saw that, and I wasn't able to confirm anything. I tried, but I haven't so far been able to control authenticate, I should say, the authenticity of it.
Okay, because what I'm doing right now is I'm looking at, now this is possible that this could be photoshopped, all right? But I'm looking at the tweet right now, and it's from the Boston Globe, and it says it was retweeted 1,691 times. From 71 favorites. One of those would be Bob Castro at Bob DTV. So if you looked at up his tweets and see if he actually tweeted it at that time, then that's a confirmation.
Okay. Now, what, therefore, bring us back to your oligarchical collectivism.
That is the control of information. Okay. It's from 1984, the book. All right, it's about controlling information, and you know, it's about the lack of the people's the people's lack of information is the strength of the oligarchy. That's basically what it's saying, and that's basically what I'm saying right now. That you know, there's going to be a lot, as with 9/11, things come out a lot later. All right, but at the time, you know, it is controlled.
Well, thank you, Ron. Thanks so much for that contribution. And we'll see who picks it up from there. Thank you for calling in. Frank from Maryland. Hello? Is Frank from Maryland there? Okay, Frank dropped. Oh, Dominic from California.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you. What is your take on this, how the media covering this event so far, and tell us what it's doing that is particularly telling in your view?
Well, first I want to say that I really love all the comments by all the callers this morning. They're like hitting it really close to on the head and just getting there with it. And I wanted to kind of add to it a little bit as far as what I see, especially the last person who mentioned propaganda. And that's exactly what this is. Now, in what form and for what purpose? I think that it's in the form of basically fear, just like 9/11 was. And that's why we hear all these reports of the mail and all that again that occurred after 9/11 as well. And so, to what end? I mean, I think there's two things going on here that they want the American people to get on board with. Number one...
But before you go, who, Dominic, are the they?
Oh, okay. Well, that's... I believe it's the same consortium we always talk about, the same... the media combining with these oligarchs to try and gin up fear, and it's the same.
All right, so Ronnie called you and told you to say oligarchical again, right? Ronnie called you.
No, actually, I think I've been listening to Dr. Cornel West too much. He always speaks of oligarchs and plutocrats, and he's absolutely correct, of course. And I think it's these people who just... Now, let's get to what they want, okay? Infamous they. I believe it's two things. Number one, which will come later, is More crackdowns at home, more assaults on our constitutional rights, and that's going to happen a little later. But I think immediately here what the aim is to get the American people on board with another conflict, i.e. war.
Hmm.
Now, don't be surprised if...
Now, what gave you that idea? What specifically did you get that from?
Because as immediately when this happened, and then in the last 24 hours or so, this reminded me more of 9/11 than anything I've heard since, because of the way they're handling it in the news, the way they're playing the replays over and over, ginning up fear, the way they're saying, oh, well, now this is happening with the mail. It just reminds me of that so much. And I think that the conflict is either going to be a U.S.-endorsed Israeli attack on Iran or an assault on Korea. And don't be surprised if this information they come out with in the next couple of days with the
now,
so-called...
What is the single most glaring clue of that?
Single most glaring clue?
That's right.
I don't know if...
See if this makes sense to you. The media, up until Monday, had a rather contentious relationship with the president.
Right.
What is the media's tone now with the president?
Oh, it's just it's pretty much the same as it was with Bush. They're basically going along with anything he says or whatever.
Well, the idea is, in this, without it even being solved, let's just say, without this situation, this crime being solved, the media has already positioned itself, and by extension, those of us who consume information via the media, to now understand that this is not a time to be critical. This is a time for us as a country to get to. Now, without knowing what the deal is with this incident, they've already decided that the machinery has to now kick in and create the atmosphere of nationalistic fervor.
Right. And I'll even expound on that a little bit, Eutrice. You notice that now everything else we were discussing before, gun control and the so-called deficit we need to fix, is going to get wiped off of the table now. Nothing's going to be discussed. Not that they were going to do much anyway, but now it's just going to be completely gone.
It is gone.
Yeah.
A couple of the presentation by the so-called Gang of Eight of the immigration reforms that they came up with would have not been the gun control issue. You're correct. You're absolutely correct, Dominic. This is how it's done. And I just wanted to point it out so that we're not unconscious when media coverage comes at us and we interpret it to be, oh, there's news. No, there's a pattern. They're following the script.
There is a definite pattern, and that's why I say this reminds me of the way 9/11 was handled in the media so much, because this is exactly what they did that time, and it's all to convey this be scared, be scared, be scared theme. Mm-hmm. You know, so we need to do something about this. And the last thing I was going to say a minute ago is, don't be surprised if the so-called quote-unquote perpetrators of this have some kind of tie to Iran or Korea or somebody that is in association with them or something, because I think this is what they're setting us up for. I really do.
Well, nobody could get anything over on you, I got to tell you that.
Thank you, Truth.
You've done a fantastic job, and this, in fact, is part of how media routinely shapes our thoughts and our attitudes. Now, if it weren't for the fact that you have a working brain, and you, let's just say you were a typical person just sitting down to say, okay, what's the news? And you take this away, you already have internalized the message. You see?
And that's what's so sad about it. 90%+ of the American population is just sitting there going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And they're not really analyzing it and seeing what's being done to them. I mean, again, it's being done. And you're right, this is a script that they follow, and they keep doing it over and over. And it's such a shame that it just keeps being successful, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, indeedy. Well, thank you for repeating Ron's theory of oligarchical collectivism. In fact, I'm writing it down because this is going to be my thing. I'm going to have to look into this a little bit more closely. Thank you so much.
And
thank
I
you, and Ron.
I look forward to having you on my show when I start my show in a few weeks here as a guest.
Just give me a call. And I'll
okay,
be there.
Thank you, Beatrice. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you. Orville from New York, you're on. Hello? Anybody home?
Yes.
Oh, good.
All right. Good afternoon. I wanted to ask, I'm not sure, I haven't been following it. I don't have TV. I don't listen to the radio too much. I'm curious about the initial Saudi person who was injured. And I found it interesting that I heard that they went to his house. And I'm just curious, did they go to anybody else's house who were injured? There were a lot of people injured. So I found that interesting.
Yes, it was interesting. The only report that I got and everybody else got was of this one person who was a Saudi national, and they went to his apartment and removed bags of things we don't know, but later they said he was cooperative and he was not. They did not deem him to be connected to the bombing.
Yeah, that just was unsettling to me. It just didn't make any sense because so many people got injured, and I don't understand why he was the only one that they went to his house, as far as I know. I'm also, you mentioned the pressure cooker, which is interesting in itself at being a pressure cooker. It's pressure cooker.
You know, that's just really interesting, you know, in symbolic terms. That's a quite very, very interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. I picked that up after you mentioned it earlier, you know. But also, it says home. It says kitchen. It says local. It says anyone. So it seems almost to say, we can just come into your house, you know, because mm-hmm. anyone could be doing this, your neighbor, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I've found that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was high-tech versus low-tech, and low-tech keeping high-tech hopping. The point here is that whenever situations occur like this, everything has a meaning. You can't dismiss it. So even though it is dismissed as, well, it was a pressure cooker they used, And we come to think of it as just a utilitarian thing and an interesting use of a kitchen tool to basically wreak this much havoc. The fact is that it is quite symbolic when you really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's a low tech effort that is, you know, that caused incredible amounts of damage. And, of course, the implication is, imagine if they really, quote, meant to do even greater harm.
Hmm.
You know, as small as that was, it did such damage. Imagine if it were even more powerful. You know, it could have been an incredible, a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. So thank you, Orville. Thanks
thank
for
you,
your contribution
you
today. Thank you. I want you to, when you listen to these stories, they follow a formula. Okay, we get the immediate story, and it is usually who, what, when, where, why, and how. We get those basics addressed. And then as time goes by, because they can't keep repeating the same who, what, when, where, why, or how, they have to now introduce new things all the time to be competitive. And to be competitive, they have to constantly make themselves necessary in your life. And the way they make themselves necessary in your life and my life is to decide arbitrarily, this is the story. There is no other story. So this is so important. We are suspending everything that we would normally do, and we are concentrating on this. But then you see the formula. Right after this explosion, and they start, you know, the hero doctors, who, of course, it was pointed out, their connection with Afghanistan. I think Michael from New Jersey gave us that, and Frank from Maryland gave us that. The heroes, the ordinary heroes and their stories, the human side of it, they humanize it to say, this is a contrast to the barbarity of the act. We have the exact opposite. We have doctors who care. We have police officers and ordinary citizens who gave their all. And all of these things are legitimate, understand. I'm not suggesting that they don't belong in the news story. These are all legitimate things. But by the time they start appearing, it is within a preset formula of moving the nation, moving listeners and viewers along a particular line of thinking. It is not that the story is a story and isn't it great. It is, here are Americans literally shining as Americans against whatever barbarity existed outside, which we believe, and as early as that, which we believe to be foreign. So whether I believe it's a conscious effort, some people may say it's unconscious, but it's a conscious effort on my part, because this is routine. You talk about, you humanize the event. So it's not just, well, this is a bomb that went off. It is, how dare a bomb go off? How dare this violence occur here? And now that it is occurring, isn't it possible, or is it very, it is very likely that we are again being assailed as a nation? And that's the work that the media puts itself to do. Richie from D.C., thank you for joining us, Richie.
Hi, Yatrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Enjoy your show. Hey,
thank you.
Did anyone discuss what the probable cause was to get the warrant, if a warrant was in fact issued for this Saudi boy?
Well, he isn't a boy. He's a grown man. He's a
he's 20, you know, kid. He's 22.
Yeah, that means he's an adult. I don't know about that.
I mean, this is a really big issue. Think about it. This is probably the most important issue here. This says that our government has a right to enter your home without probable cause. So it seems to me that it would be imperative for the authorities to provide to the public what this probable cause is.
Correct. And I'm sure that we will be hearing from that
it's
community.
Getting late in the, it's getting late in the day. I haven't heard a single question. I'm not staying on top of this, so it's not. I'm not spending a lot of time on this because, again, I'm not going to participate in it. But it's just striking to me, and it's problematic to see that the police, at the drop of a dime, can enter your home mm-hmm. and ravage through your belongings without good due probable cause.
Well, we can attribute that to the Patriot Act. So I'm sure that they would invoke the Patriot Act in their pursuit of an assailant or assailants unknown.
Right.
But it's worth checking, though. Thank you very much. That's a very good point. Excellent point. Eric from Brooklyn.
Hey, this is a wonderful.
Are you there?
I want to comment on the coincidences of big disaster and big policy decisions. It seems like this whole budget situation was dropped because of this disaster, and it happens so often that we have the president coming out with a budget, going back on all of his promises, you know, to Social Security and welfare and stuff, and there's another big disaster that's distracting us from all, you know.
the details of that budget.
Well, again, the very fact that the president has been involved in this way confirms the fact that this is already elevated at this level. Even if it were, you know, I don't mean to trivialize it, but even if, let's just say this were the act of an individual, no matter who it is, okay? One would consider that it is important for the president to, you know, to take note of these things. But there's another part that says, if the business of the country can be held up like this, then all you need is a couple more of these happening in every city, and then you would effectively have shut down the entire nation.
Exactly.
I used to say that, you know, people talk about terrorism in New York and all. Look, you don't need all that to shut down New York. You just need one car to shut down on every bridge.
Mm-hmm.
and then you have knocked New York out of commission. This is an issue. The president, of course, is in a very precarious position. This, and I don't want to be cynical, but this is how I see it, this could not have happened at a more opportune time.
Yes. How perfect.
Yeah, you know, so he would capitalize on this. He immediately has already restored his place as commander-in-chief.
Exactly.
He already has silenced.
And they always omit all of the other things that happen in the cities that the president never participates in.
Right.
Why is the Boston Marathon and what happened, negating all of the other significant things that are in the budget? That's my main problem. And one more thing that I saw, I mean, if you let me, one other thing that I saw was the inclusiveness in the coverage, talking about, all the international people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was symbolic in that no one this emphasizes the idea that no one is immune, and that somehow we're all in this together, and the whole world is at risk, and the fear of the whole world, and is very disturbing.
Well, thank
very
you.
Disturbing. Yeah,
thank you very much. Thank you for calling, Eric. We've come to the end of our program today, but this is fantastic. I'm so happy to get a sense that people are not just allowing information into your brain without deciphering it and separating the wheat from the chaff, as it were. But it is something that we will continue to do. And I have a mind, I'll see if from the feedback I get today, whether we continue it tomorrow or we continue it at another time. I just wanted to stay at least in the initial stages of the story as it unfolds. I wanted to stay current with it so we can detect the shifts that are occurring. This is a great time to do this kind of thing because we see how the formula works. There's a lot of ground we have yet to cover because I'm looking at my notes. There's a lot of stuff we have yet to get to, but we will get to it. I want to thank you so much for being with me today and contributing to this great conversation. You want to stay tuned for Jack Rasmus coming up right next with Alternative Visions. Write me at leadstories, LEID stories at gmail.com or on Facebook at Lead Stories with you, Therese Lee. Thank you so much for being with us today.